station with a slightly late start. We're beginning the TICnet. After a week of delay, and thank goodness AC2GS and WS2N did a great job of taking off, carrying on the net in my absence last week, and I thank you. Main purpose of the technical net, you guys have heard me say so often, is education. The smart amateurs, the curious amateurs, get together once a week and teach each other the inner secrets of the radio science, the wireless engineering. They teach each other this information that a lot of it's not in the books, certainly not in the courses that are taught to electrical engineering students. They don't get electrical engineering when it comes to wireless equipment. They don't get it in a useful engineering form. Let me drop. This will be TechNet number 1684. And a little bit later, we'll be hearing Space Report number 284. We got to start numbering the science and physics reports by Dr. Roy, AC2GS. A person signs into the technical net by giving this group your call letters, your name, followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. You need not sign in just because you're listening. After 34 and a half years, this net began in 1982. After 34 and a half years, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven to us, and as long as the machine is working, somebody's listening. And we don't have to spend a whole lot of time with long lists of people that are listening. You know, signing in with all the call letters beginning with A and W, and, I mean W and A, WA and WB and N and so on. We don't have to go through all that jazz. So, if you guys have got a question or a comment tonight, please give me your call letters and your name right now. And try to remember to wait in between for the four beeps. If you don't, you'll get timed out. K2RIW listening.
WA2RY, Joe, yes.
We got Joe. Who's the next person to sign in? Who does have a question or a comment? Call it his name, and then wait for the four beeps.
Kilo Charlie 2, Foxtrot, Foxtrot Alpha, name is Charlie. And yes.
Okay, we got you, Charlie. Good sounding signal. You could use a tiny bit more rodeo. Shout a little louder into the mic when you get a chance. So we got Joe and Charlie. Anyone else is signing? Because you do have a question or a comment for the net tonight. Give me a call, letters right now. K2 Romeo, India Whiskey, we're listening.
And WS2N, Paul with the space report. And how's the signal, Dick?
Very good sounding, Paul. Good signal tonight. Either good propagation or your antenna is aimed in just the right direction. Okay, one more listen. Anybody to sign in? Because you do have a question or a comment. Give me a call letter and name right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay, there being none, we'll go over to Joe first. WA2 Romeo Yankee Yankee. K2RIW, you got a Joe. Go easy with us tonight.
I always go easy, don't I? Question is very simple. Well, maybe simple. How do the current cable modems that work with RF frequency obtain the type of bandwidth they currently are advertising right now? I just recently had to change one at my home, QTH, because the older wouldn't keep up with the apparently network changes. The modem I had to buy is rated for something like 383 megabits top speed, even though I get like about 100 out of the current service that I'm getting right now. But how do these modems work? Because the channels that they're tuned to are only 6 megahertz channels. Back to you.
I'm going to pass it over to Eric in a minute, who probably has more information on this than I do. I am guessing that a big portion of it is if you've got a very high signal-to-noise ratio on the cable, you can use fancy block encoding techniques, things like 16 QAM, for instance. in the case of 16 QAM or 64 QAM or any of these other frequency QAMs, you can get a lot more bits per second than the bandwidth would indicate. Let me find out what that beeping is. Did you say something to us, Eric?
Yeah, the beeping is from me. Something's not quite right.
Okay. Should we continue or should we stand by for you to do some testing?
Keep going.
Okay. So when you start using things like 16 QAM and 64 QAM and 256 QAM, you get a lot more bits per symbol. And therefore the 6 megs of bandwidth might give you 106 megs of million bits per second, so to speak. So that's part of the reason for it. These fancy encoding techniques, we get a whole lot of bits per symbol that's transmitted over the wire or over the RF link. That only works if you've got very high signal-to-noise ratio. 16 QAM, for instance, I think stops dying at something like 30 dB of signal-to-noise, of carrier-to-noise ratio. For the really fancy ones like 256 QAM, which I think is, I think you get 8 bits per symbol out of 256 QAM. And that probably only works if you've got around a 50 decibel carrier to noise ratio over that particular channel. So as long as you get the high carrier to noise ratio, you can make different bits out of very small changes of amplitude and phase. So it's when you go to one of these spread spectrum like diagram, it's a diagram where you've got the X and Y coordinates to it, real and imaginary. In other words, in phase and quadrature signals being sent simultaneously at various amplitudes. That gives you a whole lot of bits for the particular bandwidth. So at first it appears that you're violating Shannon's law. Let me drop. This mathematician Shannon, way back in the 30s and 40s, wrote a bunch of articles on what kind of information you can get over a particular channel that has a known bandwidth. He would lead you to believe by the simple techniques they knew about in those days, if you had a 1 meg bandwidth, a 6 meg bandwidth, you could only get to 6 million bits per second, so to speak, by the usual Shannon laws. And along came the fancy modulation techniques like 16 QAM and 64 QAM and 256 QAM, and it's probably even more than that, where now you get a lot more bits per symbol, but the system will crash if you don't have very high carrier-to-noise ratio. That's some of the information you're looking for. I am guessing they're using fancy encoding techniques like that, Joe. Drag your feet in case we got somebody with a lot more smarts on this subject than I have, who will sign in and tell us how it really works. W2RYY with some delay. K2RAW in the TechNet. By the way, Joe, when you see the display for 64 QAM, 16 QAM, for instance, it looks like a great big tic-tac-toe screen where you've got four columns wide and four rows high. You know what I mean? You got 16 squares with a dot in the center. The dot in the center represents zero amplitude. And so each one of those squares represents a vector. It's a polar diagram, so to speak. So you draw a stroke from the center out to one of those squares. You're transmitting a signal of a particular phase angle and a particular amplitude to hit that square. So it's a phase amplitude modulation scheme. And so the 16 QAM gives you, I think it's either 2 or 4 bits per symbol that you transmit. That great big tic-tac-toe screen is one particular symbol being transmitted, where you selected one of those squares to be that particular bit of information during that interval of time. To be 2RYY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIS, query.
Yeah, Joe.
Can you hear me?
Well, the current modem I have, unlike the original one I had, which is a Motorola surfboard, this one's made by ARRIS, and it's a little, you know, it's a little newer construction, I believe. This one, if you look at the menu, by dialing up the web page for the modem itself while it's online, it actually lists about either, I think it's either 6 or 8 downlink and uplink frequencies simultaneously that it seemed to be looking at. The previous modem, the Motorola one, only listed one frequency. In other words, it used, say, like 603 as a downlink, and maybe 28 or 33 megs as uplink frequency. But this one lists several frequencies going as low as 22 megahertz and high up as about 35 or 36. But it seems to display all these channels simultaneously in the web access you have for the modem itself. It made me think if it was actually operating on all those frequencies simultaneously or doing some sort of hopping from one to another to achieve the bandwidth.
Aris purchased Motorola, same company.
Yeah, by these fancy encoding techniques, you can get a lot more bits per symbol within a particular bandwidth of one particular frequency of carrier being transmitted. And if you go to the next step of using multiple carriers simultaneously, start multiplying again the number of bits. Let's see what Bill's got to say. AC2IS. Give us some more audio if you can, Bill. You're a little bit low. K2RIW in the tech net. You got it, Bill.
I don't know what I can do to get more audio. Is this better? AC2IS.
You were before transmitting 25% of the right amount of audio. You're now up to 50% of the right amount of audio. We're hearing you very well. But if you had a way of playing back your signal and listening to it, as you will by way of going to the website of amateurradio.tangovictor, and you'll listen to your recording, you'll find out that your audio is quite a bit lower than the rest of us. But go right ahead, Bill. We're hearing you very well.
Okay, I don't know why my audio would be lower today than any other day, but I'm listening to your description of 16 QAM or any QAM. And I believe that this is basically, you know, this is sort of the distortion of an individual wave, right? You've got a peak and a trough, and that's one wave, and then your wave has to sort of hit certain points along the way. Those would be deviations from a true sine wave, and that's how you get, 16 of those in the 4 QAM situation, and that's how you get that kind of modulation. So I'm thinking in terms of single sideband, where you've got a carrier which you can suppress, and then the sideband is essentially, you know, a distortion from what a pure sine wave would be. It's represented by some slightly off-band transmissions, and that's what you transmit. So when you're doing, say, 4 QAM or 16 QAM or whatever, don't those distortions increase? Don't you sort of widen frequency of bandwidth that you're using? How is it that you still manage to get all that data within a small bandwidth, AC2IS?
Yeah, Dick, by the way, his audio is much, much louder on 147.97. I can hear him direct. He sounds lower on 3.7 coming out, and even lower on 8.5 coming out. So it's not his radio, it's the system.
I'll do a little more listening on Bill's next transmission. You've made an assumption that's not quite right, Bill.
WB2HWW.
You've assumed that each individual sine wave is being broken up some way, and that's not quite true. Howie, we've heard you. Stop calling me. I've heard you, Howie. I know you're there. The individual sine wave is transmitted some significant number of cycles, but QAM stands for quadrature amplitude modulation, QAM. In other words, you've got an in-phase and a quadrature phase that you could transmit if you want to.
WB2HWW.
Howie, we've heard you. Howie, we've heard you. We've heard you, Howie.
You're going to get your turn in a second. Please stand by. So, to send a 16-QAM signal, you're going to send out a sine wave, call it carrier. You're going to, for this particular symbol, you're going to transmit this particular QAM signal, which has got about 2 or 4 bits to it. That signal, for some number of cycles, you're going to transmit it at a particular amplitude, at a particular phase angle, for that symbol. And when you go to the next symbol, you choose a different phase angle and a different amplitude. When you draw one of these great big tic-tac-toe screens to make the 16 QAM, you've got 16 squares. You choose which one of those squares is going to be that bit of information, one of 16 possible choices. Let me drop. One of 16 possible choices. If this is a polar diagram, when you display it, the dot in the center of the screen represents zero amplitude. The upper left-hand quarter, square number one, is maximum amplitude at a 45-degree phase angle. The square in the upper right-hand quarter is full amplitude. Square number four is full amplitude at something like, let me think about it now. I guess it's something like 135-degree phase angle, and so on. So you choose the phase angle of the carrier. You choose the amplitude of the carrier on this polar diagram. That chooses which one of the squares you're transmitting for that bit of information. So you've got 16 possible bits that you can transmit. One of those 16 squares you can transmit during this particular signal period. And that signal period might be a microsecond or something like that. Let's see what Howie's got to say about this. He's probably done some work with 16 QAM. WB2HWW. Now you can transmit, Howie. K2RWW. Go ahead. Does that make a little bit more sense? If you Google the word quad amplitude modulation, QAM, 16 QAM in particular, you'll get this diagram, and you'll get a much better explanation than I've given you so far. AC2IS, K2RIW. Go ahead, Bill.
That does make sense, Nick, and I believe the number of patterns you get is somehow, or the structure or the frame in which they can be transmitted, somehow referred to as a constellation. So I've seen some of that stuff before, but I'm still thinking that when your amplitude is changing, either, you know, from one wave to the next or from one half wave to the next, you know, when your amplitude changes, this is a distortion, which if you were looking at it in sort of single sideband terms, would still look like sort of a deviation from your main carrier frequency. That's my understanding of sort of the logic behind single sideband. Is that correct? AC2IS.
The test set that will display a 16 QAM signal to you is called a constellation diagram test set. That extended tic-tac-toe screen, where it's 4 boxes wide and 4 boxes high. That's the constellation. There are a total of 16 boxes there. When you transmit a particular one, if you're transmitting a bit, one of 16 possible bits, if I transmit bit number 4, that's the upper right-hand corner box. This is a polar diagram. So the carrier I'm transmitting, while I'm transmitting that particular bit of information, you start at the center of the screen, you draw a vector from center out to box number 4, that represents a particular phase angle, 135 degrees approximately, and full amplitude to get there. If you have any error in the phase angle that you transmit, you'll hit some other box. If you have any error in the amplitude of the signal you transmit, you'll hit some other box. So a 16 QAM signal has a very stiff requirement for very low distortion of phase and amplitude in order to hit the right box at the right time. During the time you want to hit box number 4, you're transmitting a steady signal of that phase angle, of that amplitude. It is not changing during the transmission of that bit. If you then want to transmit bit number, the second bit of information might be box number one, you're going to flip over to full amplitude and 45 degrees angle or phase angle during the transmission of that bit. There is no modulation of amplitude or phase during the time you're transmitting that bit. You change the amplitude and you change the phase when you transmit the next bit, the next 16 QAM signals, so to speak. Each one of those signals you send, each one of those 16 QAM signals...
Repeater, timeout.
I'm a little shy on the vocabulary here. It's a symbol. Each symbol that you transmit in a 16 QAM format signal is one of 16 possible boxes. And to hit the right box, during the time you're transmitting that symbol, you have to have the right amplitude and the right phase angle held steady during that period of time that you're transmitting that particular bit. And the next time you transmit the next symbol, the next bit of information, you're probably going to go to some other amplitude or some other phase angle. Does that make a little bit more sense? This diagram, when you see it, the constellation diagram spread out by a Google site that tells you how 16 QAM works, will make it a little bit more clear. The advantage is that you're transmitting a lot more bits than your bandwidth would indicate. If I only have 1 megacycle of bandwidth, with old-fashioned techniques of amplitude or phase modulation, let me drop. With a 1 meg bandwidth channel, information channel, you'd only be able to transmit roughly 1 million bits per second. With 16 QAM, you can transmit a lot more bits per second, depending on the... It's a way of extending the bandwidth. That's the good news. The bad news, you suddenly pick up a requirement for much higher signal-to-noise ratio and much lower distortion of amplitude and phase. You got to have very low amplitude and phase distortion and a very high signal-to-noise ratio, but once you've got those designed into a well-designed system, then you can transmit a lot more bits per second than your bandwidth would indicate. That's the advantage of 16 QAM, which is one of these fancy modulation techniques that's being used on each one of those carriers, is my guess as to what's going on. AC2IS for any further questions. K2RIW in the TechNet.
DDH with a comment.
Shall we hear the comment first?
Okay, give us the full calls, Mr. VDH, and your name.
Yeah, fine business. The call is WA2VDH. Name is John. Yeah, just as a comment, with 16 QAM, with each symbol, that is each carrier phase and angle, you're conveying 4 bits of information. You have 16 different signal states to choose from, so therefore each one of those signal states or symbols can convey 4 bits of information. Go ahead.
Yeah, very glad you said that, John. It's a lot more clear now. So therefore, if I had a channel that was only 1 megahertz wide, and I'm transmitting a high-quality 16 QAM signal, 4 bits per symbol, I could therefore be transmitting approximately 4 million bits per second, even though the channel is only 1 megahertz wide. Is that about the way you see it, John? The B2VDH, H-U-R-I-W in the TechNet?
Yeah, it's actually the symbol rate is what determines the bandwidth of the signal. It's not the bit rate. See, like you said, if we were transmitting, a million bits per second, if we were using 16 QAM, we would really be going at 250,000 baud, because every one of those signal elements would be.
I don't know if that transmission is still going on, but I'm not hearing it. AC2IS.
Disconnected.
right, everybody go. JT2FSX.
Yeah, same here. This is ACQIS. I'm assuming that the Eastern repeater is no longer linked to the other repeater, ACQIS.
Well, you're still coming out on 8-5, but they're having a problem with the other people trying to talk directly on 8-5, apparently.
Yeah, I'm on the southern link. You guys copy me? JT2FFX.
Yeah, you're coming through both frequencies.
Maybe it's something to do with that echo link or something. Following it down.
Looks like we're back on the air. Just came back. Okay, I think your last comment didn't come all the way through, Bill. ACQIS, KQIW.
Okay. I don't recall what my last comment was, but I think I did invite another commenter to come in, and he did. You mentioned the term FOD, which is kind of interesting because I think historically FOD was intended to refer to a symbol rate, but it was conflated with a bit rate in common usage in IT circles. Also, I'm assuming that you're making the distinction that amplitude and phase angle are only being changed sort of in between symbol transmissions, and symbols may span multiple waves. I'm assuming, you know, two waves, or only two waves, or maybe three waves. I'm wondering if you mean then that the intended amplitude and phase angle only change, you know, when you're changing between symbols, and that these symbols occur at zero crossing of an individual wave transmission, and that somehow the fact that the amplitude and the phase angle are changing at the zero crossing somehow means that when you look at things in terms of that single sideband kind of logic, that there is not this sideband transmission because amplitude at that point is zero. Is that correct? ACQIS.
There's a yes and a no to that, Bill. I'm going to give you an exact example. Assume I'm transmitting on a carrier frequency of 100 megahertz. Assume that my channel is 1 megahertz wide. 1 megahertz wide of the ordinary amplitude modulation would mean I could transmit 1 million symbols per second. Because each symbol is going to last for 1 microsecond, 1/megacycle is 1 microsecond. It's going to last for 1 microsecond. Each symbol is going to last for 1 microsecond. Transmitting at 100 megahertz means I'm going to dwell on that symbol for 100 consecutive sine waves. So I go to my 16-QAM constellation diagram. I choose square in the upper left-hand corner, square number 1, which represents 45 degrees at full amplitude. I'm going to go to 45 degrees phase angle, full amplitude, dwell there for 100 cycles, one full microsecond. Then the next bit of information might be symbol square number 4, 135 degrees, full amplitude, for the next 100 cycles, because I'm transmitting at 100 megahertz. But I'm going to dwell there for 1 microsecond because it's a 1 meg channel bandwidth. With those numbers, you can see what's going on here. I dwell for 100 consecutive cycles at that phase angle, at that amplitude, in order to transmit that particular bit of information. And I only change from one symbol to the the next by changing amplitude and phase in order to transmit the next 1 microsecond. I'm transmitting a symbol every microsecond, but each symbol has got 4 bits of information because I've got 16 possible squares to choose from on each symbol. AC2IS, K2IW.
Repeater, timeout.
Okay, so, let's say the bandwidth that's then allocated to this symbol is directly related to the number of microseconds per symbol. Is that correct? AC2IS.
That's correct, Bill. You've got it.
Okay, so I'm assuming that this QAM modulation becomes more significant when the number of microseconds is approaching the duration of a single wave, or the, you know, the closer you get, the more useful this technique is. Would that be correct, Victoria?
The bandwidth of the channel you're working with tells you how many symbols you can transmit per second. If I've got a 1 megacycle channel, I can transmit 100 symbols per second. But if it was a 16 QAM format, each symbol I transmit represents 4 bits. So I'm getting a 4-to-1. I'm transmitting equivalent of 4 megabits per second with a 1 meg bandwidth channel. In my example of 100 megacycle center frequency carrier on this 16 QAM signal. If I was using a 64 QAM signal, I would be transmitting, let me think now, I think it's 8 bits. Somebody said something, how many bits would a 64 QAM channel signal be?
That would be 6 bits. It's 2 to the 6th is 64. It's log base 2 of the number of signal elements. Go ahead.
Well done, John. Thank you. Stand by while I get a beep. So in the case of a QAM 256 signal, which is 2 to the 8th power, I'd be transmitting 8 bits per symbol. So if I've got a bandwidth, if my channel has 1 meg of bandwidth, and I'm transmitting 1 symbol every microsecond, but I'm transmitting 8 bits of information on each symbol, I'm getting an 8-to-1 advantage on a 256 QAM. But that's the good news. The bad news is you've got a ridiculously high accuracy requirement. In order, you can imagine now a constellation diagram, which is 8 wide and 8 high, as far as the tic-tac-toe pattern is concerned, that constellation. And you can see that with that polar diagram, so to speak, an extremely strong, extremely small amount of amplitude error or phase error means I'm not hitting the right one of those 256 squares. I'd be hitting an adjacent square, and I'd be transmitting an error signal. So as long as you've got very high signal-to-noise ratio and a very accurate transmitting technique, you can get this 8-to-1 advantage in this example by using a 256 QAM. AC2IS, K2RIW, SECNAT.
This is AC2IS, and you think that in order to prevent the phase angle drift kind of thing, you need some slightly, not quite heroic measures, but you have to sort of waste a certain amount of a signal overhead somehow to make sure that timing stays synchronized properly. Just noticing that I've got an HT charging fan, and there's a transformer for it that is not plugged in. It's sitting on top of the ground plane that I'm transmitting on, that my MagnaMast antenna is sitting on. And when I key up, the little power light on that transformer lights up. So I guess it's draining a little power from my transmission. My transmission is a little bit weaker due to that LED lighting up, and the coils in that transformer there are siphoning off that energy. I don't think that's anything to worry about, but interesting comment. I think I've gotten good information out of this calm conversation, and thanks very much for that. ACQIS.
Yeah, modern day light emitting diode circuits require very little current to give you light. They're very efficient. So anything nearby, any wiring picking up some of your RF signal, can easily rectify it. And a microwatt or a milliwatt of signal is going into that light bulb. And could you measure the difference in the signal strength? If a guy is watching his S meter, he's a mile away from you, and you're watching that light bulb light, and then you pick up that circuit with the light bulb and take it to another room, would he be able to see the amplitude difference? Not a chance. Not a chance in the world. If you're transmitting 30 watts and that light bulb is using a milliwatt of it, I wouldn't worry about that. So, you can tell, Joe, of your original question, we're speculating they're using more than one carrier and some of these fancy modulation techniques where you get a lot more bits. You get a lot more bits per second when you use these fancy modulation techniques that have become popular in the last 20. They've become popular in the last 20 years or so. W2LYY. Wait for the beeps. T2LAW in the tech net.
Was the question worthy of you?
It's obviously a good question because not everybody is fully informed, including me. I've learned a better way of figuring out how many bits is a QAM signal. I used to try to calculate, how many horizontal and how many vertical squares you've got and try to come up with a bit number. Obviously, a much better way is log base 2. So it's base 2 logic, so to speak, and I'm now smarter. And thank you, Joe. The next person who was on our list was Charlie, KC2, Foxtrot, Foxtrot Alpha. If all of our delays haven't put you to sleep, go right ahead, Charlie. K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Okay, I'm speaking a little louder. Last time you told me I was a little low in audio. I actually have two questions. One about scanning, and one about mag-mount antennas. Do it though.
Yeah, we're slowly finding out that if you're going into the 975-375 input, the audio coupled from there into this repeater, 85, is a little bit low in audio setting. That's one of the many things that Eric is probably working on tonight, right now. So, not all your fault that the audio is low. But your audio sounds good, so go right ahead with your mag mount. I think you've got a mag mount question, is what I think you said. You've got it, Charlie, KG2FFA, KG2RIW.
Ready.
Wait, let me drop for a second. I think somebody's trying to come in. I waited long enough. Now, the first question is about a scanner. I just purchased a Whistler 1065 scanner. I put the cable into the computer. My computer doesn't recognize it. Not a big deal. I was able to program it conventionally. Anybody out there have one of these scanners? And do they know? They said it had no drivers. Where can I download the drivers? And any help on programming the Suffolk County TV trunking? That's my first question. K2RIW, KG2FFA.
Okay, you said it very fast. The model number of the scanner that your computer does not recognize, and you want to know how to program it through your computer. What was the model number and brand name of that scanner? Give it to us a couple times, Charlie. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do have that problem. I suppose it's a Whistler 1065. I have no problem. I'll do it manually. If anybody can help me out with, you know, the South County trunking, I want to hit the police, basically, is what I want to do. But I did all the conventional programming. I get the fire, I get the amateur radios in there, no problem. But the cable doesn't work, the computer doesn't recognize it, and I believe it's because my computer is not hooked up to me. I hooked it up to another computer that was hooked up to the internet, and bam, bang, boom, everything works fine. So there's something, I don't like that. That's kind of fishy to me, but so, Dick, back to you. See if anybody out there has one of these scanners, see if they help me out.
AC2GS.
You've got it, Roy.
Hello to everyone. I don't really have any good information about programming the scanner. I can give you some information about why you're probably not getting it connected to your computer. It's using most likely a USB chip, either an FTDI, or there's another that's infamous for being pirated. And for those, you need a up-to-date driver. If you were connected to the internet, your machine would go out looking for the latest driver, update it, and it would probably work. Since it's not hooked up to the internet, you have to go searching yourself. You can ask the manufacturer if the cord came with them, and they could probably give you a source of a driver file that you could just load into the computer and update it.
Charlie, does that make some sense? And you're allowed to ask more questions. KC2, FFA, K2RZ, you're good, Charlie.
QRIW, KC2, FFA, yes, it makes a lot of sense. Absolutely. Yeah, but you know what it is? Anybody out there know how to manually do it? I would like to actually do it without the computer. Program. Like I said, the Southern County Police Department. All the other stuff is very easy to program. Like a ham radio, very easy to put all the inputs and outputs, the data, text, all that good stuff. Just for anybody out there. That. If not, I do have one more question to ask before we get out of here.
Have any further information for how he can properly program that trunking function for Suffolk Police? And is that trunking function for the Suffolk Police, is that open information, or is that considered code information? What's your guess on that one, Roy? AC2GS, K2RIW?
Well, you know, it sort of depends upon the agency. Some of them have them encrypted, and they don't want you to get it. There. Unfortunately, I have no expertise whatsoever with scanners. I know computers, and the FTDI and the prolific for at least the last 6 years that I'm aware of. So that I'm well, scanners, I don't really have any experience with them.
WHYY, what a comment on what you're talking about.
Go right ahead, Joe.
First thing you might want to do is put that model scanner up on Google and find out if the thing will work with the newer band of trunking frequencies, because Suffolk Police used to be around 860 to 869. And when they downbanded, they went down about 15 megahertz. They started around 851 and worked their way up. Not all of the scanners from a couple of years ago will work and follow that downbanding scheme because of the way the channel numbers are sent over the air to tell the scanner what to do. That's something you have to consider. I know this firsthand because I had a scanner many years ago made by Radio Shack that used to work fine when they were on their old set of frequencies. When they changed it and downbid it 15 megahertz, the scanner wouldn't follow them anymore correctly. I have a portable and I have a base model. Neither one will work correctly. So, and they found out by putting those on Google and just saying a compatibility with the newest. That's where I found the information. There's quite a few radios out there that will no longer follow the current set of frequencies that they use.
Yeah, Charlie's scanner is Whistler 1065. And whether or not that's compatible with the trunking that's now used by Suffolk Police is an interesting question. When you went to your second computer that was on the internet and you were able to talk to your scanner, with that particular hookup, was that able to listen to Suffolk Police, their particular, what's the word for it now? I've forgotten the word, their particular trunking system. So, with the second computer, Charlie, was that able to hear Suffolk Police, EC2FFA, K2RAW in the TechNet?
No, I couldn't see it. I just was able to download the drivers, basically. Just to download the drivers for the scanner. And the other guy was a little bit incorrect. Yeah, he's right. But the old stuff is old stuff. Not a cop, the Suffolk County Police Department. Changed it, encrypted it. Now you can buy a scanner, which I just bought the other day, 2 days ago. It's encrypted, and I was a little bit helped. But you know what, I'll figure it out. <laughs> Just like the ham radio, you know, you get a plug in all these things, the menu has like 10 items, so you plug it in, you figure it out. I don't want to waste a long, I don't want to talk about those things, but it's doable manually, but I don't want to pay anybody to do it. A lot of people pay people, they bring it to them, they plug it in, and they say, boom. Done. Where you download your program and you charge your money. I'd rather do it the cheap way, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, that's good stuff. I do have one more question. Nobody has any more replies. Let me drop a second. My other question is, if I have a mag mount antenna and I put it on a top of the refrigerator or on the side of the refrigerator, does it matter? KG2FM. KG2RIW.
Whenever you're talking about an RF circuit, Charlie, there is always multipath. That signal coming out of your transmit antenna or going into your receiving antenna, you'd like to believe it's just a direct signal from the transmitting antenna through the air to your receiving antenna, the direct path. That's what you want to believe. It's not one pass, it's a million pass. It's bouncing off every piece of metal and non-metal in your house, all the trees, the ground, the water towers, the buildings, the downspout tubing, the wiring of your house. It's bouncing off all of those things. So every time you move a mag mount, for instance, on a refrigerator, every time you move it 3 inches, all those millions of signals coming together at a slightly different phase angle. You're getting closer to some of those bounces, and some of those bounces you're getting further away, and the phase is adding and subtracting, and the signal adds up a different way. On top of that, when you mount it on the side of the refrigerator, your antenna is favoring horizontal nearby. When you put it on top of the refrigerator, it's favoring vertical polarization. And so, because the original transmitter from this repeater, for instance, is vertically polarized, you would think that only vertical would work. Let me drop for a minute. It turns out that the signal you get most of the time is a little bit different or a whole lot different in polarization compared to the signal that's transmitted. That signal that bounces in those millions of bounces between this repeater and your house, some of those bounces are at a 45 degree angle, and sometimes the vertically polarized signal that LIMARC is transmitting becomes, that particular path becomes a horizontally polarized signal when it gets to you. The best thing I could recommend is you got to do a whole lot of experimenting. Try different positions on the side of the refrigerator. Try different positions on the vertical, on the top of the refrigerator. For this particular repeater, some of those positions will work better and some of them don't. When I'm using my handy talkie, listening to this repeater in my bathroom, I set my handy talkie horizontally on a plastic shelf in my bathroom. That's where I get the best reception, even though this is a vertically polarized signal when it's transmitted. So once you recognize that multipath is always there, and there's a million ways that that signal is coming to your antenna,
and your antenna takes each one of those million signals, adds them all up in a vector manner. Let me drop. Vector manner means it adds them up with amplitude and phase. If two of those paths happen to be 180 degrees out of phase, even though each one of them is a nice strong path, those two paths, when they combine, they might cancel. If one is vertical, 0 degrees phase, and the other one is vertical, 180 degrees in phase, because it's a slightly longer path length, they cancel. If one of those signals is vertically polarized at 12 o'clock, the other one is horizontally polarized at 3 o'clock, and they're equal in amplitude, and they combine at your antenna, it makes a signal 41% stronger at a 45 degree angle, 1/30 o'clock in phase in polarization angle. So it's adding in a vector manner two ways. The phase of the RF carrier is being added as a vector. The polarization of the signal after all those bounces is being added, with the polarization not being considered. So the real world of RF is a lot more complicated than first meets the eye. So you didn't get a yes or a no. You got a whole lot of maybes, and you got to do a lot of experimenting to find out which one's best for you, Charlie. KC2FFA, K2RIW in the TechNet.
All right, Dick, last question, then I'll let you carry on. So how do I tell? Is a mag mount vertical or is a mag mount horizontal? I figure a mag mount would be vertical polarized. Is that correct?
The stiff piece of wire coming out of your mag mount, the orientation of that piece of wire is the primary determinant of what is your polarization. If that piece of wire is straight up and down, like it is when you put your mag mount on top of the refrigerator, in the near field, your antenna is purely vertically polarized. After the signal bounces off all of the jazz in your house and gets out of your backyard and gets across the street and whatever, what polarization it has after all of that is a little bit less determined. When you mount your mag mount on the side of the refrigerator, that stiff piece of wire is now horizontal, parallel to the ground. It is primarily horizontally polarized. So the orientation of the radiating element of your mag mount is what determines its near field polarization. I'm calling it near field because after that signal bounces all up all the stuff in your house, even though the signal may start off purely horizontal, by the time that signal leaves your house and leaves your backyard, it ain't purely horizontal anymore. It's some other slight difference in polarization because of the way it's bouncing, the way those millions of bounces are taking place. So polarization is primarily a function of local orientation of your antenna. Over to you, Charlie. KC2FFA, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Question.
K2RIW, K2FFA. Thanks a lot. That explains a lot about the antenna. As far as the scanner goes, I didn't get much help. But next time. So, Dick, carry on with the net and wait for the space report. So, K2FFA, back to net.
N2XJN, K2RIW, go right ahead with your question.
Kind of confused. You have a in QAM. You have a two carrier signal waves, which are 90 degrees apart. Now, how do you preserve polarization in receiving antenna?
Your circuit that generates the QAM signal does have an in-phase component and a quadrature phase component. And so those two components, their individual amplitudes, how much in-phase, how much quad amplitude you put into the final stage of your transmitter
which is going to combine those two signals, results in one single signal coming out of your transmitter at some particular phase angle, and the that's the phase that you transmit, and some particular amplitude and some particular phase angle. Therefore, you choose one of those 16 boxes of that 16 QAM constellation diagram. The polarization of what you transmit, that's now a function of the particular antenna you're using and the orientation of that antenna. So a 16 QAM signal could be a 45 degree phase angle because you're transmitting box number one, full amplitude, but even that transmission could be horizontally or vertically polarized depending on what antenna you use to transmit it. The antenna does not change the bit number. The phase angle of the carrier and the amplitude of the carrier, that's what changes what bit number you're transmitting. Is that a little bit more clear, Wes? N2XJN, K2RAW in the deck there.
Yes, it is, but not quite. In QAM, the amplitude of two waves of the same frequency is 90 degrees out of phase with each other, not 45 degrees.
Negative. The in-phase signal, you could call it 0 degrees of phase angle. The quadrature signal, you could call it 90 degrees of phase angle. Those are the two circuits inside of my transmitter. There's two separate signals inside my transmitter. In the final stages of the transmitter, those two signals are going to be combined. If the in-phase signal was full amplitude, that's the one at 0 degrees phase angle, and the quadrature signal, that's the one at 90 degrees phase angle, it's full amplitude, and then combine the two, I'm now making 45 degrees of phase angle at 141% of amplitude modulation. So inside my transmitter, there are two signals. They get combined before they get to the final stage. What comes out of the final stage is one particular signal at one particular phase angle at one particular amplitude during this particular symbol that I'm transmitting. Over to you, Wes, K2RIW on the TechNet.
You said negative, and I didn't understand what negative. QAM conveys data by changing some aspect of carrier signal, or say carrier wave, and that usually is sinusoid. So in response to the signal, the QAM, the amplitude of two waves of the same frequency, but 90 degrees out of phase with each other, creates the quadrature. And that could be changed by modulation or keying. And that represents the data signal. The amplitude modulating two carriers in the quadrature can be equivalently viewed by both amplitude modulation thing and phase modulating single carrier. What was negative? I didn't understand.
Negative means I disagreed with the way you worded it. Now I realize that there's more than one way of analyzing this. If I put a fast RF oscilloscope on the output of a 16 QAM transmitter, and I take a sample of the signal during the time I'm transmitting a symbol right now. That sample I look at has a particular amplitude and a particular phase angle. It's one particular signal that my oscilloscope would see. That's one method of analysis. Another method of analysis is I could assume that the two separate transmitters, the two separate signal generators inside of my 16 QAM signal are each transmitting a signal. The in-phase signal, 0 degrees phase angle. The quadrature signal, 90 degrees phase angle. I could say that there are two separate signals being transmitted, and at my receiver they're being combined into a particular phase angle at a particular amplitude that falls on that constellation diagram and picks one particular square. Let me drop. So I could analyze it as two independent signals that are being